Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Chicago, it's no mystery that Chevy is your best bet for the unpredictable spring ahead. The snow and ice may be gone, but the spring plot thickens at your local Chevy dealer, where you'll find the true MO of SUVs. If you're thinking about taking all the twists and turns in a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to see which one you can identify. And don't worry, they can't see you behind the glass. Need the power and durability of a Silverado, the all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer, the spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban, or the sporty city-friendly Trax? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to solve the case like a pro. So don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate your nearest Chevy dealer, and start shopping online. Things are warming up out there, and you need a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy, together, let's drive.
The game is on the line, and I've only got a shot clock's worth of time to tell you about Subway's $6.99-foot-long deal. That's right. Order now in the Subway app and get any footlong on the menu for just $6.99. Fresh sliced deli meat, fresh crispy veggies. Ugh, too much good stuff. Get it now on the Subway app. Any footlong for just $6.99. Use code 699FL now. Only here for a limited time. Redeemable at participating U.S. restaurants. Subway app, online orders only. Add-ons, additional plus tax. Additional fees apply on delivery. Excludes footlong snacks. Limited time.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So far, so
welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for January 28th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box. This is sponsored this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside with your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, it's I feel like this has been a kind of a weird wrestling year so far.
How so?
I found myself at a lot of times over the last few days just kind of looking at like the calendar, looking at the results from Japan, and like what all is happening in the States. And outside of Dragon Gate and really what's happening a little bit in pro wrestling Noah, I'm just not as enthused by things with like the general landscape as much as I thought I would be by the end of January.
It's odd because I think Dragon Gate had a very good, not great, but very good January. I think CMLL has been really good this year and not enough people are paying attention to it. And when we hit the 31st and then the 1st, I'll be sure in the Voices of Wrestling Discord, I'm going to post all my recommendations in the Lucha channel for all the CMLL stuff. I think they've been very, very good this year. I've liked the booking. I've liked the in-ring. Very enthused by them. Noah is interesting, more so than good. All Japan, good, more so than interesting. New Japan has me, at least for New Beginning in Osaka, but we're still a few weeks away from that and then the Fantasticomania stuff, which I'll obviously be very into. So, yeah, I don't know. It is an odd year. You know, North America, it seems like there's a little bit of an indie resurgence, at least bubbling up. I think we're a long ways away from that, but at least something is happening there. And the mainstream stuff continues to either be disappointing or just outright not for me.
Yeah, and I have to say, as the one person veering into the abyss of Glade, it's not necessarily doing it for me. The Into the Rush tournament case, I was able to, while I was dealing with some computer issues, get through the majority of the first round of the tournament. I don't think Shima's fastball is what it used to be.
In terms of his in-ring?
Well, I mean, the tournament, the booking, and all of that. It's wild that they're going to fly Leo Rush in to do potentially what maxes out as a 7-minute match.
Maybe it is the start of Leo Rush and Lindemann saying goodbye and moving to New Japan full time.
I feel like for the two of them, that I would welcome it. You know, I mean, yeah. even though Andretti, I don't know if it's necessarily like a big positive move for AEW. He could bring Action Andretti over for a New Japan too. They need more juniors. So yeah.
Well, AEW is not developing any young talent, so you know they're going to have to go abroad because, believe it or not, having no house shows is not good for your company.
Yeah, no house shows, and then years of doing 4-hour tapings with 20 matches. Like, can't imagine that being great for talent development.
No, I mean it. You know, and I say this as somebody who bought my plane tickets to Vegas today, so I will be there. My house was silent until the moment I hit record, and now there's more noise than I've ever heard before in my house. I don't know if that's being picked up or not, but
no, you're good. It's not getting picked up.
Okay, all right. You know, Action Andretti and Lee Moriarty, and you know, the Martin that is good, and all those guys should be in Vegas working the Deadlock show and the West Coast Pro show and whatever else is good out there, but they're not. They're going to be hit away and do nothing, and it's, you know, again, it's a real talent development issue that I think right now is plaguing the United States way more than the other two countries that are relevant. But it wasn't an amazing January. You know, Kevin Hare was asking for recommendations of great matches in the Voices of Wrestling Slack today. And we kind of hit on, you know, all the obvious stuff from January. And he was like, well, what are the sicko wrecks from January? Because this is the month where everybody's caught up on everything and people will watch the 01 show that airs and the Osaka Pro show that airs and things like that. And there wasn't an answer. You know, it's a little mundane right now.
Yeah. And I guess it just really kind of struck me after Gate of Bay side going like, all right, what else is there really for this month? And I like look across the schedule. I'm like, oh, really? Not a whole lot going on. Or this is the time for me to finally do the All Japan viewing. Maybe I have to bite that bullet and actually consume that.
I don't know. I would rather you watch CMLL. I think that'd be beneficial for us.
Oh, in that case, and I can run that through YouTube. So
yeah, that promotion's really good this year. They're doing a lot with Cavernario, which is always really exciting. I think the Saturday Coliseo shows have had, by and large, really good energy to them. This most recent one was kind of the weakest one, but I've liked all the Coliseo shows. The Friday shows, I thought this most recent Friday main event, I'm going to pull it up here. I want to make sure I get the... include everybody that was in the match. Atlantis Jr., Mystico, and Templario versus Angel de Oro, Niebla Roja, and Cavernario. I went 4.5 stars on. Now, I might be higher on that than some other people, but it kind of ticked every box that I want out of a Friday show 6-man tag main event. Thought it was unbelievable. Thought everybody in that match was fantastic. People are very into Panther versus Hechicero. We talked about that a few weeks ago. I'm of course super into the Shelwa and Guerrero Maya Jr. stuff they continue to do. That is, through one month, I think the promotion I've enjoyed the most this year. But again, an asterisk for New Japan because I haven't seen any of the Road 2 shows, but I at least like what they're doing on paper for the first time in quite a while.
Yeah, I think that Osaka show, there's enough there that it's like, okay, you are treating this like, oh, especially with like Tsuji and Kid, it's like, all right, that there's a lot there with that. And I would feel like that going through the tour and the Goto kind of bump that it's getting, that it does kind of feel in like that manner, that there is a level momentum going into this tour where, and I mean, in this greater scheme of things, I think that you are getting a show that's very heavy on the top end to get people into that building at that level. But you even really like have that idea that, I mean, they're going to milk out all the Tanahashi singles matches that they can, and being able to say like, okay, at least in this building we're going to run Makabe versus Tanahashi one last time. Like, I feel like that's smart kind of doing that to fill out that card.
Well, I mean, good for them, because the Liger retirement was such a disappointment, and I don't know the story behind that. I don't know if Liger just really didn't want any sort of spotlight or what the deal was there, but outside of the Minoru Suzuki match and then his very last match, I mean, it was a complete nothing. And then the Okada stuff was so rushed and so weird, and, you know, I'm largely of the belief that I don't think he did anything wrong by not putting anybody over on the way out. That's not his responsibility per se. So they at least have a chance here with Tanahashi to do stuff that is both interesting and makes them a lot of money. And for that, more power to them.
Yeah. And for that, I mean, I don't think anyone is really looking forward to January 5th, 2026. So while he's here and the getting is good, you might as well put as many charges as you can on the Tanahashi account before he's out of here.
Yep, there you go. Before we talk about Dragon Gate Japan, briefly on WrestleMania weekend, like I said, I bought my plane ticket today, so I will be there, which is exciting. It's more money than I've ever spent on anything for myself, these two plane tickets, and then I don't know where I'm staying yet, but I'll figure that out. So we have, as of right now, it's official, the Friday night show for the Prestige Deadlock West Coast Pro Conglomeration. It is going to be Dragon Gate and Pro Wrestling Revolution, which is the NorCal indie that works with Masked Republic to supply the visas for a lot of Mexican and Japanese talent. We know that is happening Friday night. We know that Ben K is going to be there. We know Yamato is going to be there. And then the Prestige guys, Ishin, Susumu Yokosuka, Ho-Ho Loon, and KZ are also going to be included in that mix. La Estrella has said that he is going to be there. And Shun Skywalker posted a graphic of the Dragon Gate in Las Vegas logo. So we would assume that he will be there as well. Are there any talents that I'm missing before I continue, Mike?
I mean, Ultima will be at WrestleMania weekend. It's just one of those things that I am certain that he already has his booth at the WrestleCon hotel, like, set up there. So just like, we have the talent roster, but we should also acknowledge that there is a prohibitive betting odds that Ultima will be at WrestleMania week.
Yeah, that's fair. So that's the talent we have now. I don't get the impression that's everybody. I still think that we're gonna see some more names. I don't know the names. I've tried to get a full list of names. I have not been able to get it.
Yeah, I still think that there's a good bit of people that are still to be announced. I'm of the belief of that.
And I like Yamato and Ben and Ishin. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the names that are announced. I know some people that aren't coming, which is a bummer. There are some names that I was hoping that we would see make the trip over that have been confirmed that they are not coming. But I do not know the full list of talent there. I don't know how many names specifically. The other thing is that I have been told explicitly by two separate parties, and I mentioned this either last week or the week before, that there is I'll refer to it as a Dragon Gate thing, because I don't know specifically what it is. I'm assuming it is a Dragon Gate produced show, but a Dragon Gate thing happening Wednesday night. I don't know what the holdup on that announcement is. I don't know what the announcement is going to be. I would obviously like, by the time most people hear that, for maybe it to have been announced, but I checked in last week, and when there was no news, I said, any update on this? And, you know, as I was still working on it, whatever. And again, I've heard from two different people that there's a Wednesday thing happening, but I don't know what that is, and I don't know when that announcement is going to be made.
Yeah, no. When we started like asking around about this, I mean, and this is actually kind of a good way to segue over to Dragon Gate Japan stuff. This last January month, just because of all the changes to the schedule over the last few years, Case and I both wrote about it a little bit. I did in my preview. Case wrote about just the overall just kind of state of things in his written review. But one of the things that has been like a common refrain, at least from like people I've talked with, is just how busy this month has been and how that's delayed a lot of these announcements.
And I think that's a necessary change. You know, Dragon Gate is still hesitant as we now have, you know, some news about the January 2026 schedule. For whatever reason, they have never been of the practice to start their year on the first week of the year when everybody else does. They always wait a little bit. But, you know, one of the things that we've seen in the post-COVID Dragon Gate, you know, with Ryo Saito as the general manager, is the January and February months are busier than they had been during a previous reign atop the company. You know, it was, you know, verbatim, you know, it was taken as gospel that nothing happens until March, and then you get Champion Gate, and then you have to wait. You know, you hope you get a good build to Dead or Alive in March and April, so that in May you get Dead or Alive, and then King of Gate, and then World, and then, okay, there's the rest of the year. And then things really slow down, you know, sometimes in December with some of those final gate builds. But then January, February is like a rest period. And what we're seeing now is that January was a stacked month. February is going to be a super busy month. March, which again, I fear will be Rey de Parejas this year, and we'll have a King of Gate situation where almost none of that tournament makes TV. March looks to be the slowest month of the year so far. But that is not in terms of schedule. That's just in terms of what is making the network. So through the first 3 months plus, you know, a few weeks into April, it's nonstop. You know, it's as busy of a tour schedule as Dragon Gate typically has. And plus now we have an American excursion in the middle of April.
Yeah, and I think like a big way to kind of talk about, like, I know we kind of push back sometimes about like, it's not your dad's Dragon Gate. The change to the start of the year is a marked departure to how things were even like after 2018 and going into COVID. You were starting to see like a little bit of this, but just the some of the realities of the world over the last like 10 years, Dragon Gate no longer really has the benefit of having quiet months anymore. And if you look at how, at least for how the shows were this month versus even 2016 or even 2021, you see such a marked difference in the kind of venues that they now run in January. I know Case and I, we were going like, geez, they've had five shows in a week between Osaka, Tokyo, and Kyoto. And that's now kind of becoming a lot of what this January month is. And then you really add even more onto it with the emphasis of Yokohama Budokan and Gate of Bayside now in its second appearance.
Normally, I would tell people to get comfortable with the schedule and expect things going forward to look this way, but
we can't predict that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, as we learned today, that I mean, next year is going to look totally different, and that is circumstantial in the sense that, you know, for my Gate of Bayside review, which is up at voicesofwrestling.com. I don't normally talk about the business aspect of Dragon Gate in those reviews because I enjoy writing about the matches, and I, you know, 10 years in, still get quite a bit of a kick out of that. And we could talk more in-depth business stuff here. But as I was watching Gate of Bayside, I felt a slight sense of dread about what I was seeing. And it wasn't the specific attendance number. It wasn't specifically the building they ran in. It was just a combination of everything that was happening. And I talked about in this review, and I'm very happy with the written review for this show. I would encourage people to go read it if they haven't. But I talked about how Yokohama is going to become this incredibly, incredibly important market for Dragon Gate. And they need to do everything they can to make Yokohama feel special, because Nagoya is getting wiped off the map. You can forget that Nagoya exists. The International Conference Center, which is a building they've run since their earliest days, is under renovation. It will take 2 years for that building to reopen. And Dolphins Arena, the prefectorial gymnasium, which has been the site for Dead or Alive going back to 2008, that building is closing in June, and it is being replaced with a 17,000-seat arena that New Japan might not be able to run on their best day. So Dragon Gate will not be able to run that unless there's some new seating configuration that we don't know about, that we haven't heard about. So
yeah, like Nagoya is a perfect example, because this is what's happening across a lot of Japan outside of the megalopolises. It's not just like Nagoya making these changes. Hakata did it, and the kind of arenas, and when you think about the places that you've seen in Toryumon for the last like 26 years, a lot of these places were very kind of unique and kind of they worked because of where it was in the time and place. And now a lot of those places just don't are starting to really now dry up. It started with Hakata Star Lanes 2019. But I mean, we've seen really a 6-year kind of crawl to this, and just the kinds of event spaces that are getting built up are not necessarily the ones that are conducive for pro wrestling or for like an audience that you would be able to do that with. Like for every B-League arena that now exists is probably a arena that's going to be very difficult for basically anyone who's not a conglomerate to run on an annual basis.
You know, and that goes to a lot of what I wrote in that paragraph, that essay at the top of that review is, you know, Drangate has always been historically a super conservative promotion. There's an argument to be made that when they were at their hottest, you know, whether you want to count that as 2005 or 2011 or 2015, 16, whatever it is, they arguably weren't aggressive enough in pursuing new spaces and running bigger shows. But as we talked about, especially during the pandemic, the reason that Noah and New Japan and even All Japan with the sponsorships they have in DDT, the reason they were able to run the ginormous buildings that they did and fill it 35% of the way, 40% of the way, 50% of the way, is that their business structure affords them to do that. And as Jay talked about with us, you know, Dragon Gate, they could have hypothetically, let's say they could have run the Tokyo Dome, but if New Japan ran the Tokyo Dome to 30% of the audience and Dragon Gate did the same thing and ran it to 15% capacity, the company could go under, you know, the next day. They don't have that sort of wiggle room that the other promotions have. And so you lose out on Nagoya. And this is something we talked about way more in 2021 and 2022 when SB Kento was notably popping these houses in his local market because of the sponsorships that he had. But Dragon Gate is closer to New Japan in Nagoya than I think any other promotion, including Dragon Gate, is to New Japan in any other market. It's where Dragon Kid is from. It's where Ultimo's from. The company's been running there since their first days. They've always done exceptionally well there. So it's a big deal that they're losing that. Like you said, you know, they've been playing venue ping pong in Hokkaido for a decade now, and they've landed on this, you know, gymnasium in Sapporo that looks terrible. I don't like that they run it. I like the All Japan venue more, but they are setting up shop 2 triple shots a year in that Hokkaido venue that's no good. I learned today, this was news to me, I alluded to this in my review, but I actually learned for a fact today in the Discord that Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium, the Bodymaker Coliseum, that is going under renovation later this year. That is a huge blow. I'm assuming we're losing 1 and 2. At the very least, we're losing the big Osaka venue. It's a huge blow for Dragon Gate specifically because they always do very well in Osaka. You know, this is a promotion. Like you mentioned, Hakata Star Lanes. It closed in 2019, and there is no suitable replacement for that building. You know, there's a reason they're forced through these double headers and across Fukuoka now. And yes, you know, in a sense, it's a pretty building. It's much easier on the eyes than this Gate of Bayside setup was, or anything they do in Hokkaido is. But they have to run day night double headers there to make up for the loss of Hakata Star Lanes. And you and I, and people like Matt Seidel, who speaks so glowingly about Hakata Star Lanes, we know that across Fukuoka is just not a substitute for the gravitas that Star Lanes had. So Dragon Gate one by one is just losing all of these venues that really matter to them in these markets that really matter to them. And it's why Gate of Bayside made me a little bit uneasy. You know, on the surface, in the ring, this was a very good show with what I thought was a stellar main event. I can't wait to talk about Yamato versus Strong Machine J. But it's going to be really hard to convince anybody that isn't super plugged into this promotion that this is a company worth watching when the house lights are on. You have this ugly blue tarp on the ground that makes it look like you're running King of the Death matches. You have a crowd that by and large was not into things until the main event. And you have a number that was flat with last year, you know, up a whole 12 fans and about 75 fans less than what they did for Dangerous Gate. And for as good as this Yamato run has been, and it has been excellent, and I still, I still have hope that we will see a business uptick with him as champion, because I think this company deserves it. They're doing great things with him as champion. Mike, I left Gate of Bayside feeling really uneasy. I described it as like an NFL playoff loss, where you have a great regular season, you can celebrate that, things are going well, but that I'm leaving this show going, oh man, there is trouble ahead.
It's a non Pop-Tarts bowl, not in playing in a bowl game in college football. It's like that kind of vibe. Like, I totally get what you're saying about this. And yeah, I think that like the reality of the company operating like in this and being a truly independent company, like there were certain things over the years that we've kind of known, and it's like it's not like a monkey's paw situation, but it's one of those things that like you have to consider. The other side of it is that this is a promotion that its bread and butter is like is running shows, and it will always be running shows. So when you lose a place like Hakata Star Lanes, or talking about possibly losing the Edeon Complex, and that's essentially losing about 14 shows a year. You have to go find a new place. You have to go run that. And for a schedule like Dragon Gate, I mean, that easily is about 8-12% of their schedule, just off the top of my head. And I think that you kind of have to look at it from that kind of game, that kind of guys. We were also talking about in the Discord about how basically the generational outputs and how it kind of relates to how things have been at the box office or at the top of the line, and people kind of panning out. And it started as a Coda Menor conversation, but it kind of in a way turned into kind of a discussion about like how many people come through the Dragon Gate Dojo, and the fact that they now notably publicly do second and third intakes now. That's another like aspect about how the business is like, it's great to see all the young wrestlers, but there's a reality behind that. And you look at a show of Gate of Bayside, where I think I was a lot higher on some stuff than others, but overall there was no top of the line match that I would put up there with the Twin Gate match from last year. And you still like walk away from a show where like your matches that needed to have some teeth to it got that time, but you go through the undercard with the B League production lights, which I think have to be like stated that I think the big like change that they've done that has been like to the biggest detriment is the fact that they no longer bring light kits and use light kits for anything, because hey, this brand new arena has B League lights. The problem with that is that that those lights are intended to light up the entire arena, and with the exact same high level of lighting, whereas actual ring trucks and, you know, like the trusses and having lights that they would have had in the past, at least, would have given a lot better presentation. It's those are the kind of things that kind of kick me about this show. It's because it's like, oh no, it makes sense why you do this, but you also like, yeah, no, you have to. Yokohama is going to be this important place, but you're not putting your best foot forward, at least from how it kind of comes across on screen.
I mean, the reality is they claimed essentially 2,100 fans, which is, again, right in line with what they did for last year's Bayside show and a little less than what they did for Dangerous Gate in August with Yamato versus Kakuta. And I forget if this was in the Discord, if I was, I talked to a lot of people about this show. I'm actually going to read a DM verbatim later from somebody who had such a good take that I'm going to have to outright steal it and then give them credit, because I'm so frustrated I couldn't come up with the words in the way they did. But I was talking to somebody about the show. It's like, there's a lot of people in this building, but Dragon Gate is shooting themselves in the foot because it's so ugly to look at. Like, the wide shot they kept on showing, you're so distracted by the lighting and the tarp and everything else that you forget, like, oh no, there's, okay, you know, if there's not 2,000 people here, there's a really good house here. You know, Noah, when they run this building, they don't do 1,000 fans, but the building looks way better. Stardom did 1,500 in this building in October, and you know what? The show looked way better. Stardom on that night, even with less fans, looked like the much bigger promotion. And this is, you know, one of the deals, as we went back and watched a bunch of Toriumon stuff last year, that I'm really feeling the effects of scaling back right now as a viewer, because Those Toryumon shows look cutting edge. They looked like a party. They looked like something you had to be at. And hey, if you want to turn the lights on in Kobe Sambo Hall, not the end of the world. You know, that is not a place that I go to for atmosphere. But for these big shows, again, you know, there were a lot of people in that building. But God, I mean, you can't care about that when the building looks the way that it does. I thought this was a major step in the wrong direction, a major miscalculation. And one of the things that just makes this promotion look low rent, and if you're trying to, you know, this is more towards the English-speaking demographic, but if you're trying to capture those lapsed fans that hear about Yamato or really want to watch Shun or are into this Dragon Daya stuff, you know, whatever it may be, that is going to be a hang-up. You know, it is no different than people that hear about Gabe Sapolsky era Ring of Honor or Dragon Gate USA or Evolve and want to check that out. And then the lighting and the audio is terrible on those shows. You know, it is at times a massive detractor, and you and I are going to watch these shows no matter what. But I was grumpy during Gate of Bayside because I couldn't believe just how bad this show looked. And again, I wrote this big thing about how I think Yokohama is going to be this vital market going forward. But Mike, we have the 2026 big show schedule at least through February, and Yokohama Budokan is not on the calendar. So for anybody that might have missed this, today we had the remainder of the 2025 big show schedule. So Korakuen Hall and then the pay-per-views. Nothing too drastic on Korakuen. It is once a month, except for twice in June and twice in December, like it normally is, with the other big shows in 2025 being Dead or Alive on May 5th, Kobe World on Sunday, July 13th, and Dangerous Gate back in Oda Ward on Sunday, August 17th. There is no Gate of Destiny this year, and there is no Final Gate this year. On February 23rd, which is a national holiday in Japan, they will be running a show. This is February 23rd, 2026, so over a year away. They will be running the Fukuoka International Center. That is normally the Final Gate building that they run in December. They are running there February 23rd, 2026. I should also note that January 18th of 2026, which is a Sunday, Dragon Gate is going to run an extremely rare weekend Korakuen Hall show, and they only have one Korakuen date for next January.
Yeah, I guess like my reactions to it, I think that I anticipated not having Gate of Destiny because of those Edeon repairs. So I know that at least Edeon 2, that they still have bookings for let me see where the last one I have on their schedule. Like, they have Edeon 2 booked from Champion Gate, don't have the May schedule. We don't usually get a double shot in April, so we have to wait for May to see when that's kind of happening. I guess, like, the thing I'd wait to see is see what that Golden Week show is going to be, now that at least in 2026, Dolphins Arena will be under construction. So
Dolphins Arena is going away, right?
Right. Yeah. Dolphins Arena is no longer going to be on the schedule. One would think, like, maybe do you move Bayside to that Golden Week date?
Yeah. That's my thought. That's my prevailing theory, is that Final Gate gets bumped to February. They'll change the name of that show, and then we'll see Yokohama Budokan again in May of 2026. Now, again, that's pure speculation, but we do know Dead or Alive this year, the last Dead or Alive in Aichi, is Monday, May 5th, and then there's a Korakuen Friday, May 9th. So that'll be a huge week for Dragon Gate, Kobe World, and War Memorial Hall on July 13th, Dangerous Gate, Sunday, August 17th, back in Oda Ward, and then, yeah, Final Gate, no more Gate of Destiny, no more. We'll see what happens there, but I did not know the schedule was going to be released like that this week, but it ties into everything that I wrote about at the top of that Gate of Bayside review of, like, you're running out of markets. You know, you really got to make things count, and it sounds cliche and gross to say you have to spend money to make money. And obviously I don't know their margins, and it's a Japanese company, and it's not a world that I'm going to even pretend to be on top of, but Gate of Bayside had a lot of people in that building, and there is zero way that you can celebrate it. One, because the number is flat from last year. And I'm a little surprised by that given the build. Yamato's work as champion and Strong Machine J is the challenger. I'm shocked the number is flat. I'm disappointed that the number is flat, but also, these Dragon Gate big shows just don't feel like things you have to be in the building for right now, and they have to address that. They have to figure that out.
Right. And at least for me, like, the frustrating thing is I was so jazzed about it. I was like, I have to get words on paper into the lead up to the show. Like, I don't know necessarily looking at Yokohama as a market and the promotion where it was right where it is right now, that you look at least in your title programs, and it's like, no, those are the title programs that make sense that you would want to do going into your Strong Machine J, a hometown guy in the main event against your Aces champion. And it's just like the takeaway is all right, but kind of left up at that taste in your mouth. And it's kind of odd to talk about like the odd taste in our mouth when we had a main event, like the Open the Dream Gate Championship, Yamato retaining against Strong Machine J, gets his fifth key on that in the post match. Well, let's actually talk about the post match after we get done talking about the match itself. This was exactly what one would hope for, this kind of main event in this sort of building. I thought it was excellent.
I feel like I liked this show less than other people, but I liked this match way more than everybody else. I was a little surprised to see a tepid response, largely pointed in the direction of Strong Machine J leaving this show, because I thought this was the best Strong Machine J performance of his career. And I don't even think number two is particularly close. I don't know what two would be. I don't know if it would be the Shun Skywalker challenge from a few years ago. I don't know if it would be a tag match or a trios match or a King of Gate match that I can't. I don't know what second place is. I just know this is first place by a mile. And it is once again a Yamato match. You know, we go back to the theory we had when Pac was champion 6 or 7 years ago now, where he held that belt and he said he's going to leave this place in better shape than he found it. And I feel like Yamato's kind of doing that one by one with the younger guys on the roster, where after every match, whether it's throwing Kaku to the lifeline that he needed, Ishin, Daya, now Strong Machine J, he is elevating these guys through losses. And I thought this was, you know, to your point at the top of the show, easily one of the best matches in January. It is my second favorite Yamato defense behind the Daya defense at Final Gate, best Strong Machine J match of his career. I was blown away by this.
Yeah, and I think that seeing how this match was built, and especially as we talked about it last week, about how you've completely turned the program on its head, and now you had this huge lingering question of, is Yamato actually physically able to be the champion that he has positioned himself as after that kind of match against Shun Skywalker, then to go in there and do a match that, I mean, how did we kind of, in a way, talk around it and talk about this? Like, this is a match where Yamato was in control for approximately 2 minutes of a 21-minute match. This was the time possession would have been 90% 10, and then at the end being able to definitively put down Strong Machine J in the manner that he did with the Ragnarok. I thought that this was just like such a bold kind of position of booking to kind of get to that point, and especially in a match where I think that Strong Machine J really came out so much stronger than he was before.
Well, I think going in, you and I assumed that the match structure would be Yamato's gonna work on top for 20 minutes. He's gonna stand on his head. He's gonna rip his mask. He's gonna really provoke the Yokohama crowd that Strong Machine J's hometown. And like you said, that didn't happen. Possession was 90-10, if not 95-5. You know, I made a note in my review that had this match ended in a time limit draw at, say, 20 minutes, the scorecards would be overwhelmingly in favor of Strong Machine J. He started the match out hot. He was hot in the middle of the match. He was hot really up until the end. It was a fascinating match structure, and it goes especially in the trend with the Ishin match, the Daya match, where Yamato is just so giving as a world heavyweight champion, giving to a bizarre degree, you know, giving in a way that we just historically don't really see champions act. And it's not weakening Yamato at all. It's really, I think, emboldening him in this weird way that he's able to survive all of these title defenses. And you know, the Strong Machine J thing, again, he's dominant up until he goes for the machine suplex. Yamato at that point does a really cool counter. Never seen anybody counter the move like that, where he just sort of tucks his shoulder and rolls into a roll up. And then from there, it's Galleria and Ragnarok, and that's the pinfall. And Mike, you know, this match with 23:51, think about the Yamato Dreamgate matches we've seen over the years that crossed the 20 minute threshold and that felt like 40 minutes, that felt like 50 minutes, that, you know, were total slogs to get through. This match to me had another 10 minutes in it. You know, they I don't think were anywhere near done telling the story that they told. Now, they landed the plane. The match was excellent as is, but we're now seeing, I think, in the same way that when Doi won the Dreamgate belt in 2020, 2019, 2020, he completely reshaped the way we think about him as a singles wrestler and a top guy, because that reign was an overwhelming success. And what do you know? I said this in July, and I will continue to take this victory lap because I couldn't have been more right. This is the career-defining reign for Yamato. He is doing the best work of his career as a world champion right now. And for a match that went 24 minutes, again, I thought it could have gone 32, 33, in the same pace, same structure it was going, and I would have been incredibly satisfied.
Yeah, because I think at the end of the day, what they accomplished, and I made a big point about this in my review or in my preview, that Ryo Saito and people in the room for a couple of years really lost sight of how to do a main event singles program.
It was his biggest hurdle as a booker. We talked about this at length going into World last year, that there was just this weird pattern of overly cutesy booking that was at times needlessly complicated, and it really took the wind out of some matches that deserve to have a bigger and more proper build.
Right. Well, we look at the build that we had here. Strong Machine J gets a win in 2024, gets the challenger's key, and then consistently has his number. Then you have this like huge traumatic event, at least in Yamato's eyes, of that match against Shun Skywalker. And all it does is it really builds up Strong Machine J, builds up Strong Machine J. Like, really, outside the last 2 minutes, it completely builds up Strong Machine J the entire time. And what does that do? It makes Yamato look better. Yamato, the wall that stands as like the person that is now like the supreme final boss, having this strong of a build now just adds so much more to Yamato's reign. And we weren't ever saying this about a Madoka Kakuta title defense. Yuki Oshioka, even though I think I am the high person on it, he was having these great matches, but we weren't necessarily saying that, oh, the champion feels like it's stronger, feels like it's a bigger deal that when Yoshioka dropped the belt, that because he went through all of those, we weren't able to like say that back in 2022. Whoever beats Yamato now is beating the person who's like endured what all he's endured. He sealed the Brave Gate, and you have essentially created now this perfect monster that whomever beats him for the Dreamgate title gets like a massive, like just like cachet of credibility that only happens because of how strongly this match was built up. And all of the credit of that, I think, has to go to the people in the room and GM Ryo Saito.
Yeah, I think they're going to have him break Shima's total defense record and day record, because there's no one remotely close, and I include Shun Skywalker in this conversation. There's no one on the roster right now that can do for other wrestlers what Yamato was doing. Again, this is like a tried and true world championship level performance each and every time he defends that title. It's an old school title reign, you know, with the way he's elevating people along the way. And we did this last week, you know, in defense of Yamato retaining this title. I won't go through the list again, but I mean, you have the entire roster at play. Again, he's defended the belt against Kakuta and Ishin and Daya, now Strong Machine J, and then Kano from Pro Wrestling Noah. You haven't scratched the surface on these guys. You know, you haven't gotten a Shun challenge and a Minoru challenge, and you can always go back to Kai, and I'm hoping Jason Lee gets one, and I'm hoping Yoshiki Kato gets one, and Hamare's there. And again, like, that's just the heel unit. You go through this roster, I don't think his work is anywhere near being done. And this is where I will go ahead and I will just directly steal from a DM that I received from Garrett Kidney, because I was talking to Liam, his co-host on the You've Got to Be Kidding Me TNA podcast, which is fantastic. I don't listen to it enough. I always love it when I listen to it. I was talking to Liam a few weeks ago about a bunch of stuff, like GLATE and just a bunch of other nonsense. And he mentioned to me in passing that he had talked Garrett into watching the big Dragon Gate shows this year. And I love Garrett Kidney. I value his insight. I always think he comes at wrestling from a really interesting point of view. Watching that much TNA in your life will do that to you. And so, you know, a few weeks ago, Garrett was talking about how Yamato versus Daya and Yamato versus Shun were so interesting to him because Yamato was giving as much as he was as a world champion. So I watched this match, and the first person I reached out to was Garrett. I was like, you know, whenever you watch this, send me your thoughts on this. I'm dying to know what you think of this match because I thought the structure of it was so weird. And Garrett said it. I just have to steal this because I thought he put a bow on what this Yamato run is. And it, you know, this ties into the show closing promo so well. Garrett said, I really like the story of Yamato being the last man standing, both of his generation as a top guy, but also the last man standing between the new generation and fulfilling their potential. And that is such an eloquent way, I think, as we talk about this show closing promo, of saying, everybody relax. I said this when Yamato won the belt, and people were like, well, I guess the young guys failed because they're going back. No, the young guys did not fail. Part of a larger story here. Everybody relax. The direction they're going, I think, is an incredibly wise one, and I am fired up about what comes next for Yamato.
Yeah, and it's just seeing the guy work in this level and how giving it kind of is. Just gets you excited to see, like, I came away from the show not necessarily thinking, oh, I know what the big plans would be for the rest of the year. I immediately looked at, okay, how many weeks are we away from Edeon Arena 2? What is the assumed champion gate week? And it was like, can we get Yoshiki Kato to that place? Because with the way that Yamato is going right now, I want everyone to take advantage of this possibility to have a match with him in this run.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Absolutely, absolutely. What was your star rating on this match?
4.25.
Okay, that is, after watching it initially, that's where I landed, and then I wrote about it. And every once in a while this happens. Sometimes it happens in the opposite direction where, like KZ versus Monte at Cork, and actually I had that in my notes as 4 stars, and then I wrote about it, and I thought, you know what? That's 3.75. I don't want that going to the notebook. I had this at 4.25.
I've edited my star rating on air talking to you.
Yes,
before.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I had this at 4.25, and then I really thought about, like, I'm so interested in the people that did not love Strong Machine J in this match. Now, I say that as somebody who fully recognizes this could be the best match of his career. We might not ever get this again, and that's a problem for another day. I thought he was the perfect babyface challenger.
Sure.
Playing his role perfectly, doing the damn thing. I thought Yamato was perfect in his role. To me, this was a 4.5-star match. And it goes back to, God, I think I was talking to you about this on the show. Because I think it was this show. Like 6 months ago, I watched Brian Danielson versus Samoa Joe from 2004, the Midnight Express reunion match.
Okay,
and it made me profusely sad because I was like, nobody in wrestling can have this match now. This is this style. Is like, it's like watching a Los Brazos six man. It is, this style is dead. No one is doing this anymore. And it's not a one-to-one comparison to say that this Yamato versus Strong Machine J match was like a Brian Danielson Ring of Honor world title match, either as a challenger or as the champion. But it felt to me like it had spiritual kinship with that idea. Like, this was a really unique match structure that gave the challenger a lot and still made the champion look amazing. And it honestly reminded me of a classic Brian Danielson performance by the end of it from Yamato. And so I went 4.5 on this. Again, initially was thinking 4.25, but I loved this match. I thought what they did for this crowd, I thought was perfect.
You know, it was probably the thing that that stopped me from getting to like that 4.5, like that real end of the year consideration with this match.
What's that?
And it's not really anyone's fault here. I just, like, with the way that the match was laid out, even though Strong Machine J had 90% of the match, I really maybe bought him getting like maybe one or two falls, not nearly enough as I would have hoped for like this kind of match, because what you've described, Case, is like my ideal kind of championship match. The touring champion takes on like the local town hero and makes them look like that they have a chance against the world champion. I don't feel like we got to that point here. And I think that was the thing that kind of held me back a little bit, whereas you're able to kind of edit it in post.
Yeah. You know, I think that's totally fair, because we really don't get a ton of tease for the machine suplex. The only time he goes for it is when Yamato counters it into that roll up, and he doesn't have a secondary finish. I think the biggest hope spot, even though he controlled most of the match here, the biggest hope spot for Strong Machine J to win the world title,
it was the headbutt, right?
I was going to say the bridging German suplex, but I think okay. Those were one and the same, because the bridging German was like, shit, I didn't know he could do it that well. You know, that was Mochizuki Jr. style almost.
Best bridge maybe in the world right now, Strong Machine J.
Outside of Jr., yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, because, geez, it was just like this. But like for me, at least with that match, like we were kind of like taken to the level we wanted of Strong Machine J. And it's not like a thing where like I know like a popular thing to do is like, well, he has to change his look and drop like the dad trappings and all of that. I think him like pulling out his dad's old like WAR and show what moves added a lot to the match. I thought that was kind of cool. And that's like I feel like that this is a situation where like the one thing that would have changed for him would have that he would have had his open mouth port mask. That is the one thing I would have changed.
I think that's probably a fair criticism. I like the presentation, you know,
new gear is great.
It's really, I thought about, you know, cause I, again, as we kind of, you know, hit 2025 into 2026, I'm going like, okay, wow. I've watched Ben and Shun's entire career, and I've written about everything these guys have done, and watching this match, I really went back into the archives and was like, wow, I've reviewed everything Strong Machine J has done. And I was out on the original machines quicker than most people. I always say, you know, they debuted in April. I was sick of them when they won the belts at World, and I was completely done with them by the time they lost the belts at Final Gate. But Mike, I mean, we used to spend such time on this show
heeing and hawing about him.
In 2020 and 2021, the thought was maybe he's just not cut out for this promotion. Maybe because he was doing act one of his career, the machines gimmick without the machines. And it felt so out of place. It was such a disaster. And then he joined Natural Vibes and found him. And I wouldn't change a thing about his presentation. Personally, if I had say in what he does next, I would have him and KZ win the Twin Gate belts in March. And then I would just give them a dominant Twin Gate run. And this is where this promotion, it's so conservatively booked that I wonder sometimes if it's a problem for its own good. You know, Daya feels hot right now, but Paradox retained the belts there. And Strong Machine J just had this almost record-breaking Triangle Gate run, and now he's lost the Streamgate match. And it's like, okay, what else for him? You know, give him something else. Either have Shun Skywalker tear his mask off, have Ishin tear his mask off, or put the Twin Gate belts
Mochizuki
on him.
Mochizuki Jr. or something.
Give him something. And I just don't know if he's going to get that thing. And for as strong as I think this company is booked right now, you know, this is not a recent issue. We talk about the cycle up, cycle down stuff all the time. And I just don't know if this is the time that we need to de-emphasize him at all. I like the fact that even coming out of Final Gate, you know, Daya won the three-way trios match on the 2nd December Korakuen, and it was in the Triangle Gate match here. Like, we haven't gotten rid of Daya as a guy that actually matters. And Strong Machine J, because he just had the Triangle Gate belts for so long, and because he just lost the Streamgate match, okay, where do you go from here? Twin Gates. I would put the Twin Gates on them immediately. It looks like they're going to go with KZ and UT in that spot instead.
Yeah, and we still have the potential of Rey de Parejas, kind of. Just like sussing out and how, like, Strong Machine J now probably will need to have a KZ seems like the partner for him for a Rey de Parejas, but freaking KZ and UT, that certainly makes things a little bit more questionable about his tag team kind of prospects. But I can tell you what Strong Machine J is doing immediately right after, Case.
Please do tell, Mike.
Well, after the match, Yamato called out the entire Reiwa 6 and said, hey, 2023, y'all made that big pronouncement and declared yourself the next leaders. Didn't do too much in 2024, and now I'm in 2025, and y'all aren't at the place where I was expecting y'all to be at. And he basically addressed all six of them. And in doing so, this really kind of provokes you and Skywalker, because Skywalker views himself as higher than anything else in pro wrestling. And that brought out GM Ryu Saito, and now we have a special six-man tag happening at February 5th Korakuen. It is Benkei, Strong Machine J, and Kakuta versus Shun, Kota Minoura, and Yamato. So we're getting as much active as we have, but we're getting a Reiwa six tag match to headline that first Korakuen of the month.
Maybe I'm off base here. You know, you could certainly talk me out of this opinion, but people get so weird about Dragon Gate generational stuff. And I think this is similar to maybe some of the Shima promos we saw with A10 T-Hawk about a decade ago, although far less mean-spirited, which is, I think there's truth to what Yamato's saying, you know, in that, hey, you guys, you know, we only did 2,000 Yokohama Budokan. New Japan did 3,000 last time they were here. You guys need to step it up. But also, this is part of a larger story they're telling. And again, it goes back to Yamato winning the belt at World and people going, well, I guess the new guys failed. And it's like, hold on. We're getting something out of this Yamato run. They're setting something up, and I don't think any of us have quite figured out what that endpoint is. Shun Skywalker, of course, I think right now would be about minus 1,000 betting odds to be the one to dethrone Yamato. But even then, you know, we'll see what happens. But I didn't freak out about this promo. To me, this was Yamato leaning into a storyline of when he won the belt at World. He said, I took 2023 off, and then I looked around at the start of this year and I asked myself what was missing, and I was missing. You know, there wasn't enough Yamato in the main event. And now here we are 6 months later, and he's going, well, where have you guys been? Why have I been main eventing? I think people get weird about this, but to me, they're just telling a larger story here.
Yeah, and I think that part of telling this story, it does take a little bit of historical reflexivity, because this is not, and Jay brought this up, not the first time this has happened with a Big Six, and these sorts of matches happen like well into 2012, 2013, 2014. It's not that Shima and Mochizuki went away. It's just that that they spent the time to get them up to that level, and they were found ways to reintroduce them like in 2015, 2016, kind of into that mix.
They're mirroring what they did in 2011 right now.
Right.
I mean, this is, you know, think about 2008, 2009, 2010. Who held the belt? It was the Dreamgate belt. It was Doi, it was Shingo, it was Yamato, it was Yoshino. And at that point, you know, the economy of Japan was so different, but they were looked at as failures. And so Shima and Mochizuki said, give me that belt. We're going to take care of this for a little bit. And then by the time that they were ready to give it up, you had already had establishing reigns for those four guys. Tozawa was in a better spot. Hulk was in a better spot. And then you were off to the races with the golden years of this promotion. They're doing the same thing. You know, again, the economics of it are different because so much of this started during COVID. And even before that, you're coming out of the OWE split. So it's not, you know, 2016 to now. It's not a one-to-one comparison. Of course, I think by this point enough time has passed since COVID, and you know, we're 2 years back to normal crowds in Japan, where again, I look at this number and it being flat with last year and go, that's a disappointment. You know, they should have had more people in the building for this show. But again, they're mirroring what they did 15 years ago. And I encourage everybody to take a deep breath on that.
As I like to say, it's the same music, just different musicians playing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like it's and that's why like I make a big point out of no January scheduling. That is where it's not your dad's Dragon Gate. The booking patterns, these are the same booking patterns we've seen for 26 years at this point. But I like that you also have the fact that now the people who are directly opposing Yamato in that match all either dropped the belt or have had recent enough title matches that we're probably not going to get a dream key situation happening if Kakuta pins Yamato. You know, I think it kind of keeps an open question into the overall kind of who's the next challenger situation is still kind of potentially be an open question going a little bit deeper into February.
I hadn't noticed that. That's an interesting point. Yeah, because they've got, you know, Kakuta, Ben, and Strong Machine J, who Yamato's already beat against him. I mean, I say this because he's a Twin Gate champion. I think at some point you have to do Yamato versus Minoura. I'm not in the mental state to prepare for that match right now. I would rather them not do that next. So we'll have to see. Again, this could be a springboard for Yoshioka to come back. I know everybody's worried about him. In the Yahoo Sports summary of this show, they mentioned Yoshioka still being hurt. His name was mentioned. I heard his name was mentioned on Japanese commentary. So the Yoshioka thing sucks. I can't believe he's been out, 13, 14 months now. But I also said Tozawa wouldn't sign with WWE. Here we are 9 years later. But I don't think Yoshioka is going anywhere. I just think this is an injury that is really, really hard to rehab. How did Jay describe it on commentary? If he pushes himself too hard while working out, his eye could explode, basically. So they've had to be incredibly cautious with it. So, but this could be a chance for Yoshioka to come back. I don't know what the plan is coming out of here, but I know I'm very excited about this match.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, they'll have a show in Kyoto before that, and anything can happen in Kyoto. So
A one match show, let me tell you.
But you know who is going to be there in Kyoto? That makes me wonder if I know that he's that they've said that he's like still numb, but he's going to wrestle through it. Dragon Kid will be in Kyoto.
It's true. Actually, you know what? This is a two match show because the opening match looks awesome. It's Mochizuki, Yanagiuchi, and Sahara versus Rita, Jackie, and Mochizuki Jr. But the main event on the Kyoto show on February 1st is All of Paradox. That is healthy against Shun, Minoru, Kai, Ishin, and Yoshiki Kato. So, I don't know. What do you think? DQ finish and a restart with Dragon Kid and Hamare?
Yep, that's what I mean, just like looking at how it's kind of set up, like they've kind of positioned it so that you could put either Jason or Hamare in there pretty easily.
It goes back to, my initial report when he got hurt was that they were eyeing February as...
Right, yeah.
And they were like, look, this could be February, this could be October. It's a neck injury. We don't entirely know, but February was the first month that was thrown out at me. So this would kind of go in line with that.
Yeah, and he has been at shows without the neck brace. And I know Jay mentioned on commentary that he's getting used to it, and that seems to be the thing for Dragon Kid, is it's not necessarily like the numbness that's holding him back. It's him getting used to it, which is kind of wild. But I think though that you like look at that February Corkin as kind of the kicking off point, and I think that will also be a kicking off point for it within the Twin Gate division as we work our way back. It feels like we're right about Rey de Parejas season, and it looks like that we're going to need to decide a new Twin Gate challenger after Jason Lee and Kota Minoura retained in their first defense against the Gold Class team of Jackie Kamei and Rita. I don't know if we want to do full Kota Minoura therapy right now, Case, but boy, did this match have the feeling of, well, we know what Kota Minoura is going to be for the next year and a half.
I thought the Dragon Gate channel on the Voice of Wrestling Discord this week was awesome. I really enjoyed the discussions that were in there. They were informative. They were good opinions. And a lot of that was based on a Kota Minoura discussion that we had. And I've said it before. I've sold my stock on Minoura. I don't think it's ever going to happen with him as a 1A sort of guy. I was not expecting Jason Lee to eat his lunch in the way that he is in these tag matches. I think Jason Lee is outshining him to such an insane degree as not just being cool Jason Lee that's always a great wrestler, but being the muscle in this tag team. I think really doing the things that Minoura should be doing, Jason is just so much better than him at. And Jason is jumping off the screen, and Coach Minoura is there to do, as I described in the Discord, paint by numbers heel routine where he comes in, hits a weapon shot, and leave. Now, maybe that's what he's being asked to do, but if that's what he's being asked to do, he's doing it in the least compelling way possible. This was a great Twin Gate match with three really great wrestlers and a bad finish that I thought was executed poorly by a guy that drug this match down. And that is super disappointing. It was, in theory, a great match, but it was a great match in spite of Kota Minoura.
Yeah, because you really got to see, leading up to that closing stretch, like how magical this Kamei and Rita team has been, that they felt like they've been teaming for years, even though that they've had five matches together or thereabouts, if you include trios. And it was a lot of it was playing off of the fact that you had like kind of the pairings, but the true highlight was getting to see this like babyface team really come to its own in like a position where like you would be like, oh, you know, there's all this story here and you have like the reflexivity of it, but wouldn't it be kind of a situation where you want your heel team to kind of put them into the dirt and then be like, okay, we are the tag team specialists here and no one else is going to have our number. No, it felt like that you had just a whole lot of Z-Brat fuckery towards the end and then a sloppy kind of closing weapon shot into the closing stretch. And it's frustrating because like I want to be able to be like, Kameh and Rita are potentially the best tag team in wrestling today, but you can't really talk about them in that context without talking about who one of their dance partners was and how it's just I'm not even like selling my stuff, all my stock in Kota Minoura. It's just like you don't see the gears moving, whereas Ishin was trying stuff. I know I liked Ishin's earlier Z-Brat's stuff a lot more than everyone else, but he was trying and attempting things, and it just does not feel like that there has been any sort of attempt other than doing weapons attacks and keeping a t-shirt on. Like, that's the only difference you have with Kota Minoura now.
He's just so uninteresting in a unit that is as interesting as they've ever been, with Shun and the strides Ishin's made and Jason just, you know, hitting this heel character out of the park in a way that I never would have anticipated, and Kato and Hamare, and you know, Kai had this weird match with Masato Tanaka on this show that I was completely fascinated by in this morbid way where I was like, God, this, I can't believe this match is as good as it is. I really didn't want to like this, but here we are. And you know, I mean, the comp that I had in the Discord is that Minoura is 2018 Ata. You know, he is getting completely bailed out by Shun and by Jason in the same way that Ata, I don't think, was ready to inherit the heel unit that he did. And if it wasn't for Pac, I think 2018 and 2019 would have been an even darker time. But you had Pac save the day, and when he was in Japan, you felt the difference. And it was Minoura, it's just not there. And you know, the bummer with this match and the finish is we just had that Corkin show. And my big complaint on the premium singles match show on the 15th was, okay, this show was very good, but there's an entire middle section of this show that was just dominated by Kota Minoura heat sections and matches that he was in and matches that he wasn't in. And I felt like we paid the crime there. You know, we paid the Kota Minoura heel fee, and I would have liked to have seen it kept out of this match entirely. But alas, it ruined the finish.
Yeah, and especially in a match that I think we both came into with like well-founded expectations for it to be something special, and it just never really had that possibility, because with how the show was laid out, there was going to be, I mean, being frank, you had most of Z-Brats on the first half of the show. There were shenanigans there, but you didn't really have the opportunity for it anywhere else. The Kai Masato Tanaka match, it's a hardcore match, really not a place for any heel shenanigans. So then you're left with the Twin Gate match saying like, we need to have heel shenanigans somewhere. And instead you could have just had a show without the heel shenanigans.
No, you could have beaten Kameh and just said, okay, you know, we beat you because you're new here and we're a well-oiled machine and we've been a tag team for a long time and we're better than you. And that is all they had to do here. Again, the work between Jason and Kameh and Rita was outstanding. Those are three, you know, for my money, three of the 50 best wrestlers in the world. You know, by and large, I think Jason and Rita are creeping in on that top 25. And, you know, Minoura is not in my top 250 right now.
Yeah, and it just feels like it's going to be quite a time before he gets anywhere up there. I ended up being, and this is like the real shame of the star rating rubric, where I was 4.25, almost 4.5 on the Dreamgate match. I was 4.25 and disappointed with the Twin Gate match. The finish did not take it out of me as much as it did for you.
Yeah, I was 4 flat because I did not like the finish. I mean, this match was trending to be a much higher rating, and then Ishin pulled the referee's leg out, and then from there again, you know, I mean, the bummer with Minoura is that it's not only the heel stick that, you know, I wouldn't have liked in this match anyways, but I thought he did it poorly. You know, I thought it was a poorly executed heel routine. So it was
there's
a
rhythm
whammy
that you have to do with it. And he does not seem to have the rhythm where even like other people who, when they get into the heel section, they pick up the rhythm of you have to keep like the, if you're doing it for like the finish, you have to go boom, 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 boom. I remember like there was that whole time during RED where it felt like that they were stalling forever for a powder attack, and you just can't have that when it comes to a finish.
But, you know, to compare the two tag team partners again, Jason turned heel in March, and then I believe, I got to pull up last year's schedule. I want to get this right. I think they'd had the Fukuoka double shot in April of last year.
Right, yeah, and, yeah, it was a part of Ray de Prairie House.
And yeah, Fukuoka, it was April 14th. Yeah, by April 14th. So Jason turns heel March 30th, and then they go to this Fukuoka double shot on the 14th, and he has it down. You know, he knows exactly what he's doing. I remember being blown away by just how naturally he transitioned to being a heel on those shows. And Menorah now, you know, he turned heel in August, so September, October, November, you know, 5 months later, he does not have that. It's another thing that he doesn't have.
Yeah, maybe I was giving him a little bit more credit about how soon the heel turn has been. No, it's been half a year. So
yeah, it's just what does he do well when he's not directly wrestling Rita? And you know, Rita's entering a territory where I think you and I could have a really compelling match against him. So I just I don't know what to do with him. He's not going anywhere.
No.
But I don't know what to do with him.
I mean, if he ends up just being a tag team player and a tag team specialist, you know who was a tag team specialist who has never been known necessarily as a promo or anyone of any sort of charisma whatsoever?
Who's that?
Susumu Yokosuka.
Yeah, but I you know, Susumu Yokosuka is also, I mean, still so much better.
I mean, I'm just talking about similar profiles.
Is your point there that the archetype for what Menorah should be striving for is Susumu?
Yeah, I think if we readjust, like, sadly, we have to readjust our expectations of him. But, I mean, that's just a reality. When you get a group of six, not all six are going to hit on the straight, right? Like, you just can't necessarily make that sort of prediction there. But if
I think by and large, like, our listeners, I still think would have Strong Machine J in the sixth spot in terms of potential. But I highly disagree with that. I think it's Shun atop the mountain,
mm-hmm.
and then Ben
only because Yoshioka has not been around.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna include Yoshioka in this. I was drawing a blank on the six guys for a second, even though they're in the upcoming main event. So yeah, I mean, I would have Shun, and then I would have Ben and Yoshioka in their tier together, and then I would have Kakuta and Strong Machine J in a tier together, and then way below them, I would have Menorah. I have no faith. I think it's like a pitcher he's like Rick Ankiel, you know? He lost control, and he's not getting it back. He's got the yips. Coach Menorah has the wrestling yips.
Yeah, and this is not a promotion where I think they're going to be like, well, you know how we solve people with the charisma yips? We send them to CMLL. That's not a reality that Dragon Gate lives in. So
No, because he went to the UK last year, and it's not like he came back and now granted, he only worked one or two matches there, and one right, was against Brian Kendrick, so you know, let's hope they didn't have any private conversations about their beliefs on the world. But it's not like Menorah came back from the UK and we were like, wow, there he is, you know. It's just like, I guess he's back now. Okay,
no, that's entirely fair. That is entirely fair. The third title match we had on Gate of Bayside, Paradox, Susumu Yokosuka, the aforementioned tag team specialist I was mentioning. BB Hulk and Kaga Tora, the champion team, make their first successful defense against D-Courage, Madoka, Kakuta, Dragon Daya, and Ryoya Tanaka. Interestingly enough, it was the Big Six member, Madoka Kakuta, who took the fall here, losing out on a huge clothesline exchange with Susumu Yokosuka. Yokosuka gets him with the Jumbo no Kachi Gatame. That's his pinning package lariat hold to get the defense for Paradox. And I think, like, now that I'm like thinking about it, after the main event, probably my number two match of the night.
I liked the Twin Gate match just a little bit more, but I did like that this match went 11 and a half minutes and they never slowed down once.
Yeah, and it just was like sequences into things, like that there was a sequence into a first flash that was just somewhat out of nowhere, that it was just like, wow, okay, that is great. And then Kakuta doing breakups of pens with running hip attacks, and you're like, oh yeah, no, Kakuta needs to break up every pen of a hip attack now. Just pedal to the floor the entire time. There was a little botch that they completely bailed themselves out of by the end, and then that last minute and a half is a sumo, and Kakuta was excellent.
Yeah, I feel like I have to say this every time Kakuta has a great match, even though it's somewhat frequent. As a star, he does feel ice cold right now. You know, the Kakuta is not as hot as Dragon Daya and still not as interesting as Ryo Tanaka, but we forget that he's, you know, he's still Madoka Kakuta. Like, the guy can fucking work, and you saw it in the finishing stretch with Susumu. I mean, what a great job by those guys.
Yep, that was a finishing stretch that the Twin Gate could have used. You know,
100%. When Minoru throws that knee at Rita a dozen times, and all of a sudden we've got ourselves, you know, a really, really high level Twin Gate match. But instead, you have what I thought was a good Triangle Gate match with a really excellent finishing stretch.
Yep. This is my third 4.25 star match on this show.
Wow. See, everybody liked this show more than me. I just like the main event more than everybody else, because I was at 3.75 on this. And again, you know, similar
that's fair.
Rating.
Yeah. But yeah.
Again, this show was paced very weird. Did you watch this all in one sitting?
Yes, I did. I actually, for once, I got up early on Saturday and turned off my phone, sat there with my iPad, and watched the show straight through.
Did you watch it live?
No, I'm almost 40 years old, Case. I can't do that shit.
I was gonna say I would have texted you during the show. We could have. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Because I watched it live, and you know, I knew we were in for a weird show, and the opener went 4 minutes, and I was like, oh, that could have gone 14, but okay. And then, you know, it was touch football match, a Warage match, which sucks shit. And then that Captain's Fall match only went 9.5 minutes, and I was like, man, that's.
That was a 9.5 minute match that felt like it was 20 minutes in the right way.
Yes, but it should have just been 20 minutes.
I don't think that one side outside of Mochizuki could have gone 20 minutes.
Okay, well, we'll put a pin in that because we'll come back to it. But the point was, you know, watching this live, I had a really hard time digesting the Captain's Fall match into Tanaka Kai, into Paradox versus D Courage, because they all had the same tempo, which on one hand was enjoyable because they just all did a ton of shit, but they were all the same structure of match, and that really threw me off. I should watch this Triangle Gate match again, just outside of the vacuum, because I think I might enjoy it more the next time I watch it.
Yeah, no, and watch how they get into that first flash that Hulk hits. Hulk was excellent.
Well, Hulk, I mean, I don't know what he did, but he's been incredible in Paradox.
Yeah, I mean, he's on his perfect role, which is being a third on a Triangle Gate team.
It's like, really, I mean, that is, you know, I'll not to repeat myself too much, but that, you know, the Dragon Gate is always going to be judged by how interesting their heel unit is, and Zebrats right now is very interesting, but if Paradox isn't hitting the way that they are right now, I think we have a totally different feel of the promotion and feel way differently about it than we do. But Paradox, which again, you know, it's Hulk and Kagetora, famously two unmotivated guys. Yurio can be unmotivated, and Susumu, God bless him, you've definitely seen him take a step back, but they're awesome. I'm so into Paradox. I am so excited they've hit the way that they have.
Another group that I'd argue has hit the way that they should have. Oh, we're not on that match yet. I was about to jump into Mochizuki Dojo. Let's talk about Kai and Masato Tanaka. And Ho-Ho, no selling ECW jokes.
That's our guy.
Yeah, this was exactly what I thought you would get out of a Kai versus Masato Tanaka match in 2025. I thought it was kind of wild how it was a little heatless throughout it. It just felt like they went through doing all the hardcore match stuff as fast as possible.
I mean, I would describe every match on the show outside of the main event like that.
Now, I mean, that's fair, but I think that for Kai in his hometown doing these kinds of things, I was hoping at least for a little bit more activity from inside.
Yeah, I described this match as being bizarrely good because it was a hardcore match, which I'm not really interested in, and it's Tanaka and Kai, and I understood why they were doing it. I like both guys. You know, Tanaka can still go. Kai is, if you know, you know, he's actually a good wrestler now. It was 12 minutes of just a bunch of shit. Again, this is in the portion of the show where these guys just never stopped moving. But it wasn't bad. It was quite entertaining.
No, it just kind of it all was happening. We got table bits. We got a fire thunder bomb, like attempt off onto a ladder. It just, a lot of stuff was all happening, and then Kai ate a sliding D through a chair, and we left.
It was good. It was just, it was so, I think it speaks to the booking of the promotion right now, where you have a lot of undercard stuff. Because you have so many young guys in this promotion right now, even the undercard stuff kind of means something. And then you have the main event stuff that I think is booked really well right now. So when you have a match that is ultimately just meaningless the way this one was, it really sticks out.
Yeah. And how much of a tonal difference like this match was versus the two matches before and after it.
Completely.
And then we talk about a group hitting its stride. Now I could say that. Mochizuki Dojo, they live another day as Masaki Mochizuki, small packages Captain Yoshiki Kato to keep his dojo alive for one more day. It's worth noting that Daiki did the double knees to aid him into this. It came down to Mochi and Daiki at the end. And notable, none of the Mochizuki Dojo guys got were able to get like pins. They were doing over the top rope sort of things. Really just like the top rope kind of stipulation aided this match, making it so that you could eliminate Ishin and you could eliminate people like Hamari and people like that.
I love this sort of match. I like the gimmick quite a bit. I like the over the top rope eliminations. And again, this is where you and I will disagree a little bit. It was a 9-minute match with 20 minutes worth of action. And I mean, they worked it like the building was on fire. I don't understand what the rush of this match was, because I don't really think the elimination set in. And you're right. Maybe, you know, Sahara and Yanagiuchi and, you know, even Fuda aren't ready for that length of match. But you have to do it at some point. And I felt like they were in a safe space here on the card where you knew you were going to have the energy pickup, at least, you know, theoretically with Kai and Tanaka immediately afterwards. I loved this match. I thought the work was great. Yanagiuchi, once again, fantastic. Sahara having Hamare's number, I think, is a super clever story between those two. I liked what everybody showed in this match. I don't know what the rush was. I felt like we were just getting into this by the time things ended.
Yeah, and you're kind of left with Kato looking like an idiot, which, I mean,
a little bit. I mean, I didn't mind the finish at all.
I mean, more of that Kato looks like an idiot to use his winning wish to do this match and then not completing the job.
That is true. He should have asked for a dream game match in Osaka instead.
Yeah. No, I mean, you could tell that his mind was off the game. I mean, I would ignore that geek Daiki and go for the belt, man. But yeah, I think Daiki really was the star in this match, especially with like the stipulations and the rule set being what it was, getting like such great moments with like Daiki selling basically his ass off for like the first 3 minutes of this match. And then when he's able to like, when they're able to kind of like rev up, he does the Gucci rocket through the ropes at like the exact right time. And his timing is really something that I think is his like special kind of thing, is like his timing for when he goes for his pin sequence, and his timing when he goes for his tope suicida always feels like that he picks the exact right moment for it. Maybe I sounded a little hard saying that they weren't able to do like a full-fledged like main event style match. It just kind of felt like that when they compressed everything into a sub 10-minute wrapper at this point of a card, where you basically at that point maybe they lost time because of how bad the Ware gate was and how long that went on. But it did kind of feel like that things were kind of compressed into that package.
I mean, I don't think Sahara is anywhere near being able to work for 20 minutes, but you didn't, you know, you needed him to have the Hamari spot, which I thought he nailed, you know, the football tackle off the apron. And then he was immediately put out of his misery by Ishin. But between Mochi and Ishin and Daiki and Kato and Shun, like, let those guys work a little bit. Daiki's a good wrestler. And they've, you know, I mean, it's coming up. We're, you know, it'll be 2 years since he debuted in March, and he doesn't have a, you know, an official win yet. And you got to let him do something at some point. And I love the story they're telling with Kato. Again, I'm super invested in this. I think it's a great undercard feud. But I was disappointed that this was only 9 minutes, because I thought they were doing great work. But nothing was able to settle in with me. You know, Sahara eliminates Hamari, but then Ishin eliminates him right away, and it was too much. I really felt like this match deserved more time, and I hope they come back to something similar. You know, I know a lot of these Shima-isms have completely left this promotion, and we're not getting Nanawa-style elimination matches anymore, but man, does it feel like you have the potential. If you just want to ride this feud throughout Kobe World, really, it feels like you have enough gimmick matches in the tank to just go back to various forms of elimination matches with these two teams.
Yeah, and I mean, at this like coronation, it does feel like, oh, you have to do some follow-up at Sumbo Hall. I mean, that's where the tournament was. They will be back there in a few weeks. It just feels like, okay, that's a good next place to kind of do that. And I guess they're not going back into Kobe until the end of the month, but you have like this whole entire schedule where it's like, I think you could probably put do a Nanawa or Fukuoka style elimination match and do it as one part of the doubleheader on the 11th. You know, I mean, they're at the point where absolutely, I feel like there's way too much meat left on the bone here as a feud. And at the very least, like the way that you get the people that you have questions about, at least so far in their career to that point, is you push them in those sorts of matches. So yeah, they should absolutely continue with this.
Daiki's first win has to be in Cork, and you know, there's no reason to do it elsewhere. But I also you know, this is not a feud that ends with him winning. This is a feud that ends with Kato looking strong. So it's not even a question of, well, you know, you got to burn another 2 months of Daiki losing and then he can win and then it's over. It's like, nah, you know, him winning is just another chapter in this. Just let him keep going. I'm intrigued by the Sahara Hamari stuff. I think it's interesting that Hamari is kind of getting goaded by Sahara time and time again now, and it's looking like a fool as a result. I think that's an interesting story. And I think the Yanagiyuchi Kato stuff is great. And it gives Masaki Mochizuki something to do. So to me, it is good stuff all around. And I thought the finish with Yanagiyuchi doing the Meteora into a Mochizuki roll-up was awesome.
Yeah, no, that was exactly what kind of needs to happen. Because, yeah, no, this is like a feud that hopefully, at least between Daiki and Kato, ends up being something that you're able to use as a touchstone throughout the remainder of their career. So no matter how this kind of ends, one would hope that you've built up enough there to go back and to be able to revisit it. And again, with like with the lineup and like the schedule that they have, there's no reason for them not to consistently go back to that. Case, you got to deal with my personal hell yourself with this Awari Gate match. Just not good. Like the Yoshida as champion is just, it's just awful. And it's just a bad comedy gimmick that's getting way too much time on actual Dragon Gate programming and not on like Buyuden shows.
It's always a little hard for me to analyze because it feels like it's not for me. You know, I try to straddle this line of like, is this something that is just obtusely Japanese and I have no cultural touchstone for it? Or is it just bad? And I'm leaning towards it's just bad. But I never want to go too hard on it because, again, there's a chance that just, you know, maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. It's not like anybody that I talk to in Japan is like, hey, you know what was awesome? This Takashi Yoshida Kikutaru match. So I don't know.
No one has, like, even people I have talked with, like, it's not it does not seem to be like a super over thing other than immediately in the building for the match being over.
Yeah, this was, watching this show live, having to sit through this was not fun. I did not enjoy this.
Yep, man, that's another reason about get to the old life, and then you know that you don't have to be at 4 a.m. watching that kind of match, you know.
I really get a kick out of watching these shows live. It sucks that Korkins are always in the middle of the week because I can't, you know, I'm at work when these Korkin shows are happening, but I love when we get a big show on a weekend because I do still enjoy that setting so much. But man, this one sucked. This was a bad time.
It was a bad time. And then before that, and maybe another reason why this show felt so kind of weird, you had that bad time take up so much time, and you had a 10-man tag, Fuji, Horiguchi, Kanda, Asachi, and Monte versus Ultimo, Hyo, Doi, Kondo and Owashi. We get a double bicep senton for Hyo on Boy there. And really, this match was the Hyo show, and really only notable for the fact that Hyo and Monte were on opposite sides.
One of the only times in history it's happened, by my calculations, only the third time in history that they have wrestled each other in a match that isn't a battle royal.
Yep. Also notable, Doi being pissed because he was not tagged. I don't think Doi got tagged in at all during this match.
That sucks. They should have tagged him in.
Yeah. He was playing it up as jokes, but then I had to go back and I was like, I don't think Doi actually tagged himself in here. enjoy that easy paycheck there, big dog.
Doi's gonna have his working boots on because he's got that eight man against Zebrats and Corkin. And is he on the Kyoto show? Yes, he is. Yeah, he's in the main event of Kyoto.
Yep, and this is right after dropping that All Japan belt.
Which sucks, because I wanted to see Doi versus Daya.
Yeah.
I really would have liked to have seen Doi and Daya in All Japan. That sucks that we're not getting that.
Yep, that's a bummer. But good to see him like back now, at least getting back to a full-time schedule there. We open up the show with the remaining members of Gold Class, Benkei and Mochizuki Jr., versus the remaining members of Natural Vibes, but it so happens that this is an established tag team. Former Twin Dragon champions in Ryukyu Dragon Pro Wrestling case, KZ and UT, and they got the win going strong into Rey de Parejas season.
This could be a Twin Gate match. You know, these are two awesome tag teams.
Easily, and you got like 4 minutes where it was just a good time, and you guys see UT have a little bit of edge, and then it was over.
Yeah, I mean, again, this went half as long as the Owara Gate match, which I have a problem with.
Yep, and that kind of settles how we feel about this Gate of Bayside show. We have a little bit of a problem with it. Case, as we are watching, I'm proud to announce that there has finally been a Gate match go above 3.5 stars.
Holy cow, who do you got here?
It Takahiro Yamamura versus El Lindemann into the G-Rush tournament, 3.75. Good piece of wrestling, kind of like this tournament that they've had on.
Yeah, that tracks. If I was gonna pick a good match, that would be it.
Yeah, just have it only be 7 minutes long and or two count and or two escapes.
Can I give a match recommendation here?
Please do.
I've got wrestling on in the background. It is from the wonderful wrestling YouTube channel that Griffin Peltier has cultivated, the Hollywood's Wrestling Rewind, Hollywood, HOLLYWD'S. And he has a hour-long comp of Negro Casas in the WWF. There is a six-minute tag match. It is Santo and Casas against Apollo Dantes and Jose Estrada Jr. I'm going to tweet this match out in just a second. Let me tell you, American wrestling would benefit greatly if they structured six-minute tag team matches like this one. Fantastic match. Fantastic television wrestling.
That Negro Casas guy.
Pretty good. Pretty good. I've been going back into, now he's not involved in this, but I've been going back into 1993 AAA to try to finish out that year. Viano 3, pretty good. I was emailing somebody a few days ago about Super Astro. Mike, are you familiar with Super Astro, the luchador?
Vaguely, only okay. In like the most vague terms.
I'm gonna get you antiquated with Super Astro. I'll send you a six-man tag that let me pull it up here. You know, if you're going to watch the six-minute Super Astros tag, you might as well on YouTube look up Angel Azteca, Soler, and Super Astro against Blue Panther, La Parca, and Rambo from AAA on August 30th, 1992. If I were a wrestler, I would be trying to emulate that match. I'll leave it at that. We could all learn something from early 90s lucha. That is the decision I've made this week.
You know, like I maybe I was picking Coliseo Torreo, like a UWA in like 92 and 93, but was getting a lot more enjoyment out of that than like anything that has been on Dynamite.
No, it kills me that we really only have UWA TV from 92. In any sort of, I mean, Roy has a sizable chunk of UWA 1992 out there, but we don't
have... And it's
have,
great episode stuff.
It's fantastic. I mean, the roster is insane. It's, you know, it's one, it's a ton of Hamada, which is fantastic, but no, it's awesome. I enjoy, again, I went through a lot of that stuff when, you know, when you and Alan and I were doing Greatest Wrestler Ever a few years ago, and it was like I was just looking for any Hamada footage that was out there. It's awesome. I mean, there's a treasure trove of UWA stuff that is either filmed and we've never seen or wasn't filmed and we'll never see. But yeah, 1992 UWA on Roy Lucier's channel is a good time.
Yep, that it is. Should we run down the card for Kyoto before we get out of here?
Let's do it. I don't know when we're going to record next week because that Kyoto show is not strong enough to do a full show on. And yeah, then Corkin is on the 5th, which is a Wednesday, and I probably don't want to record on Tuesday right before that show, so we'll figure something out.
Yeah, and geez, I had it there a second ago. It's the schedule this month, just as I'm getting this all pulled up there. They're in Kyoto for the 1st. They'll be in Corquin on the 5th. The next weekend, they have that day-night doubleheader in Fukuoka. They have Kobe Lapis Hole for Prime Zone on the 21st, and then Kyobo, the Kobe Art Center in Hyogo for the 23rd, and we have Memorial Gate's going to be on the 24th this year. So we'll see if they actually end up having much of a card out there for that. But as we look to Kyoto, running down the cards, the opener we talked about earlier, Mochizuki Dojo, Masaki Mochizuki, Daiki Yanagiuchi, and Akihiro Sahara versus Gold Class Rita, Jackie Kamei, and Mochizuki Jr. Singles match, Punch Tominaga versus Benkei, D-Courage versus Ultimo, Hyo and Luis Monte, KZ and UT versus Jason Lee and Hamari, then match 5, the entirety of Paradox versus Shun Skywalker, Kota Minora, Kai, Ishin, and Yoshiki Kato.
That is a two-match show.
Yeah, and they usually announce 6 matches for these shows here, so I'm my radar is way up for that. Like, I think that we are getting the I think there's a good shot that we're going to get Dragon Kid doing an appearance there. He will also, Case, this weekend be making an appearance at the Setsubun festival, the bean throwing ritual. This is a traditional like start of the year festival that Dragon Kid will be making an appearance at the Akuta Shrine in Kobe, Hyogo on the 2nd, so he's sticking around in Kobe at least the next day.
Well, thank goodness.
Thank goodness. Anything else you wanted to touch on before we got out of here this week, man?
I don't think so.
Well, we will be back sometime next week. We will announce that on our channels. You could get with a conversation with us on Discord. We have the Open the Voice Gate channel where we'll post our match listings, discussions from the episodes. And then, as Case was talking about earlier, the Dragon Gate channel where we have a whole lot of conversation, at least over the last few days, talking about things dating from Kota Minora to when do you define eras in the dojo to venues within the Japanese market that they might run. But it's the best place to hang out and talk about Dragon Gate, and you can do that. The Voices of Wrestling Discord, the Dragon Gate channel there. The show's on social media at Open Voice Gate. Case is on Twitter at _ in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care, everyone.
Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
The game is on the line, and I've only got a shot clock's worth of time to tell you about Subway's $6.99 footlong deal. That's right. Order now in the Subway app and get any footlong on the menu for just $6.99. Fresh sliced deli meat, fresh crispy veggies. Ugh, too much good stuff. Get it now on the Subway app. Any footlong for just $6.99. Use code 699FL now. Only here for a limited time. Redeemable at participating U.S. restaurants. Subway app, online orders only. Add-ons, additional plus tax. Additional fees apply on delivery. Excludes footlong snacks. Limited time.